The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 645 for Sunday, February 19th, 2017.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. The show where you send in your questions, your tips, your cool stuff found. We share them, we answer them, we discuss them, we dissect them. The goal is for every single one of us, me included, to learn at least four new things each and every time we get together here. Sponsors for this episode include Blue Apron, where you can get three of your first three meals for free at blueapron.com/MGG. Otherworld Computing, of course, the folks at MacSales.com, excellent folks there, and Barebones Software, the makers of BB Edit at Barebones.com, excellent folks, all of them. We will discuss the details of what it is we're talking to you for on their behalf about today in a moment here in Durham, New Hampshire. I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun.
How goes it, Mr. F. Braun?
Good, and it's your day tomorrow.
It's my day tomorrow, February 20th. Why is that?
Well, I think it's a President's Day, right?
Oh, right. That's right. Yes, that's right.
And you're the president of at least one organization.
Yeah. So, much to my dismay. That's right. Yeah. No, it's all good. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Fun stuff. President's Day. I'll make sure to be as presidential as possible tomorrow.
So outstanding.
That'll be fun. All right, cool stuff found, because we've got I think four things on the cool stuff found list. The first is from Harvey, and he says, I'm a bit behind in listening to MGG, and I'm just listening to episode 642. That's not that far behind, Harvey, where you had a discussion about shopping list apps. I'm not sure if anyone has mentioned this to you. The app that I use all the time is Google Keep, and it's part of the Google Apps collection. It works somewhat similar to Apple Notes, where you make a note and then share that note with anyone you want on any device. You might need a Gmail account to use Google Apps, but those are free. What's neat about it is what's neat about using it for shopping is if you create a list and name it shopping list, as you try to enter items on the list, it will suggest shopping items to include. Let's say I want to add mayonnaise to my shopping list. When I type M, milk, mushrooms, mayo, mozzarella, and meat pop up. I could choose mayo, or when I add the A, I get mayonnaise, mayo, mango, margarine, makeup. It's very useful. So, and it's shareable and all of that stuff. So, he says you can check or uncheck items and delete things. So Google Keep, we will put that on the list. Good stuff, man. Very, very cool. Right. Anything else to add? I feel like we've finally come full circle on the shopping list thing. So it's been a good discussion to have.
I didn't even know about Google Keep.
I know.
I hope they don't, just when it becomes useful and people like it, kill it off. As Google tends to do with some things.
Some? Yeah. Yep. Ask me why we haven't yet talked about Google Wi-Fi. So, but we won't today. We will maybe in the next show. I finally got the answers to my questions about all that stuff. So I have to assemble them. It just came in. So anyway, Mike has, speaking of wireless mesh, Mike says, I discovered a rather inexpensive way to use Mocha to create a bunch of Wi-Fi access points to extend my network and make what I'll call a quasi-mesh. He says, you can find used Fios routers on eBay for about $25, including shipping. He says, hint, find a refurbished seller and make an offer if you don't want to fool around with bidding. These Wi-Fi routers are built by ActionTech, who makes most Mocha adapters, and of course, they have built-in Mocha. Get revision F of the MI424WR router, and that way you get Mocha 1.1 and B, G, and N Wi-Fi, and Rev 1 to add gigabit Ethernet. Or you can get the current Quantum Gateway, the GreenWave G1100, to get Mocha 2, which is backwards compatible with 1, and dual band AC Wi-Fi. So that's actually what I would go with, is the GreenWave G1100. To do this, he says you can mix and match either of these three versions depending on your purpose. You just have to configure these as bridges, turn off DHCP and Wi-Fi, put them in bridge mode, and then they become Mocha adapters with four Ethernet ports and Wi-Fi. He says, if you don't already have a router already, use a Fios router as both a router and MoCA adapter using the WAN port and the MoCA coax port. Turn on the Wi-Fi on the remote adapters using the same SSID and password as your main Wi-Fi router, and they become wired Wi-Fi access points to extend your network into a quasi mesh. He says the downside is that these things are a little bit huge, but what an interesting, I like this. I like this thinking of going and getting some of these things. And it looks like, you know, these things, you can get them, each of them, for, you know, less than $100, and they're not that huge. I mean, they're bigger than like a little Eero unit or something like that. But, you know, they're like the size of a cable modem, let's say, a large cable modem. Yeah. Yeah. So fun stuff. I will put an eBay search in the show notes that will point to some of these things. So, yeah, fun stuff. Really fun stuff. Huh. I know, it's pretty good, right?
Well, at first I was like, is it really a router or is it just like a converter? But no, I'm looking at it. It's a full-blown router. I'm surprised you can get it for $20.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, I think you're probably going to wind up paying about $60 by the time all is said and done. But even still, you know, that's about what they look to be going for. Somewhere between $60 and $90.
I'm looking at it and it looks pretty beefy. You may want to use it just as a router. Dual-core 64-bit processor, 100 megabits per second, blah, 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 whatever.
Oh, it's just 100? Are you, wait, which one are you looking at? Because the G1100 is, should be gigabit.
Oh, all right. No, I'm looking at the MI424WR.
Yeah, okay, you're right. So that's the 802.11n1 that he mentioned. So, yeah, it's fun stuff. I mean, you know, listen, the quasi-mesh thing, there is nothing inherently wrong with it. Especially if you've got a router that you really like and you just kind of want to build the mesh out. Along those lines though. And I think I'm allowed to talk about this. Well, we're going to talk about it anyway. Cause they're sending me some and it should be out soon, but, what's the name of the company? I wasn't prepared. Amplify, who's made by Ubiquiti, right? They make a mesh wireless solution and they're base station kind of is the one that looks like a clock radio. And then their Wi-Fi, they call them mesh points, are just plugged directly into sockets and have like a little antenna sticking up from your socket and from your electrical socket. And that's it. So there's no Ethernet backbone with these. There's of course no MoCA backbone, but they are now positioning. And I think I've got a set of them on the way. They're positioning to sell the mesh points standalone that will build a mesh out of your existing Wi-Fi from your existing router. Now, obviously there's not going to be the same level of mesh intelligence and handoff and all that because they're not like, you know, they're just like sort of glomming onto your existing router. But I like the concept. I haven't tested it yet. So don't go run out and buy these things, even if you can, but it's pretty cool that, you know, Amplify is doing this. I like the concept of a sort of an add-on mesh, if you will, because it seems like a lot of the limitation that we're running into with mesh products is that they prioritize building the mesh, which is good. But as routers, they're like, you know, most of them are just okay. Like the Eero is really robust. But you know, kind of the rest of them, you know, they're getting there. But if you've got a great router and you could add a mesh to it that really does what mesh, I mean, really the best scenario, and this is totally decadent to do, but actually we have a couple of listeners that have done it, is the Synology RT2600 AC as a router, just as a router, and then Eero in bridge mode, just as a mesh. That's like, you know, best of all the worlds. It's kind of, you know, it's not cheap, but hey. So there we go. Fun stuff. A little bit of caffeine is going a long way for me this morning, John. Can you tell?
Yeah, I ran out of coffee, so I'm on English tea right now.
Mm. Yeah, I don't do coffee, but I did go with the, I don't know if it's caffeine or matine in the Celestial Seasonings Morning Thunder. I think it's a little bit of both, but it's got some latte in it. Yeah. All right. One of my favorite things that I found at CES that I wasn't allowed to talk about until this week is the Pioneer Raze Lightning headphones. these things, they have become my new favorite.
Wait, Lightning headphones?
Correct.
Using Lightning for audio? That's crazy
talk. Well, that's what you use on your iPhone 7, right? If you're going to plug headphones in, they are Lightning headphones.
Up until the iPhone 7, though, that wasn't a thing, but now.
No. It's always been a thing. You can use these with any Lightning-based iPhone. Yeah, there have been Lightning headphones. They just haven't been all that popular because there wasn't a direct market. But now there certainly is. And these Pioneer Rays, they have become my favorite wired headphones. And instantly, even on the plane ride back from CES, I was just hoping nobody would see them and like ask me about them because I was still under NDA on them. But they sound great. So here's what they've done. When you get Lightning headphones, the headphone itself or the cord, but the package has to have a digital to analog converter in it, right? That's just how it works. Even that little dongle you get from Apple has a DAC, a digital and analog converter in it, because it's got to convert the signal to analog, because your ears are analog. Rays Pioneer took it one step further, and they made these headphones intelligent. So they've got a DSP, a chip in them that does all kinds of cool things, and there's an app to configure the headphones. So one of the things is that they do noise canceling. They've got microphones kind of all over the place in these things, and so it can do smart noise canceling and really, like, especially on an airplane, totally kills the volume. It's great. It also tunes itself to your ear. You calibrate these headphones. You put them in your ear. You press a button, kind of like what Sonos does with TruePlay, where it tunes to your room. This actually tunes to your ear because it's got a little microphone inside the headphone, and it can it like I can definitely notice a difference between when it's in calibrated mode and not calibrated mode. It sounds much better because it's tuned for the way my ear sort of channels sound. So that's there. It's also got auto pause. It knows when you've taken these things out of your ear, and it'll pause your music or a movie. Like, I've been watching movies on my iPad on all these plane rides I've been doing. As soon as I take it out, the movie stops. I can speak with the flight attendant. I could speak with the flight attendant with these things in, by the way, but it just looks rude. They're always a little hesitant to talk when they see you've got headphones in. So I just take them out, and it has the added benefit of pausing the music. And I seem polite, which I try to be. And I speak with them. And then when I put them back in, the music or the movie resumes. And it's got, so there's two other things and I'm saving my favorite. The sound is great, right? Cause that's the most important part, but I am saving my favorite part for last. So there's two other things. Number one is it's got inline controls for like volume, play, pause, that kind of thing. And then it's got a separate smart button, and the smart button can be configured to do things like launch an app like Apple Music, right? Or, and you can do different things. You can single tap, double tap, or press and hold. So the smart button can do three things. So I've got mine set. One of them launches Apple Music. One of them, turns on and off the hear through mode, which is a thing that sort of lets outside sound in. So I could have a conversation, like I said, with flight attendants or whatever. And then, I forget what I've got the other one set to, but, I guess I've got it for mute and unmute of the microphone, because you can use these for phone calls too. But my favorite part, John, is that it's Lightning, right? Which means you can't charge your phone or your iPad while you're listening to something with the headphones. Right in the cable, they put a Lightning port that you can plug your charger into. And so it charges everything while you're listening. It's brilliant. I love these things. Pretty good stuff, huh, John? You got to see him at CES briefly.
I was going to say, I recall you not showing them.
Right.
Someone not showing them to me.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting because so the thing you mentioned, I actually, still have to get one of these. I think it's out now, but Belkin, if you recall, Belkin was talking about making this adapter that would let you do the audio and the charging at the same time. I think that's out now. I have to get one of those.
All right, so hang on. We're having a sound problem here. The first thing I want to say, though, before we move on, is that these things, I believe, I need to find the price here. Yeah, so there's two versions of it. There's the Raise and the Raise Plus, and the Raise are $99.95, and the Raise Plus are $149.95. And so now let's figure out what's going on with your sound, John. Give me one.
Well, you're like fluttering. I thought it would clear up, but it's not.
Yeah,
I
mean, just stop for 1 second.
Okay, so you're hearing
just
weird
stop
things
for
me.
1 second. Yep. Okay. Now, is that better? Speak.
I will speak. Yeah. I'm speaking. Call me back.
Is that better? Yeah. You know what? Let me pause the show here, and we'll be right back. All right, we have resumed, and I think we're back in business, right, John?
Yeah, I don't know. I cycled power on my Yamaha. I don't know.
That's actually what I was thinking would need to happen is that your audio device.
I was hearing my audio in my ear was sounding terrible, and I guess you're saying that what was coming to you was sounding terrible as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
Cool.
Well, there you go, folks. Another tip. If it's not working, turn it off and on.
Reset your audio interface. I actually, for the record, I have so... free, and you know, this is how it's gone here for years, but I have a FireWire unit. Actually, there's three audio interfaces that I use on this end to do the show. Two of them are FireWire, one is USB. Actually, I guess the FireWire, the second FireWire one, the little one's not in use, the USB replaced that. But USB audio sucks, and if I don't power cycle my USB audio interface before every podcast, I have some kind of problem. So it's just part of my routine. I just get here, I turn it off, I turn it on. All good. USB audio is great for a lot of things, but real-time stuff, I don't know, buffers get... I don't know what it is, but over time, it just needs to be reset. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, so those are the Pioneer Rays. So definitely, like, really, my favorite in-ears, you know, to travel with now. My only complaint about them, and I think what I saw was retail packaging, so it's possible that I am wrong on this, but assuming what I got was retail packaging, my only complaint is there is no case included with them. So once you finally kind of rip everything out of the packaging and you've extracted them and you got them going, now you throw away the box because the box is now useless to you, and you have this bundle of wires. So... So that's my only complaint is that they have no thing. And, but what I did is I put them in, Digital Innovations makes the Nest earbud case that would actually be too small for these, but they make another one, like a larger one for something else. It's a green one that they make. I'll put a link to their website, but the larger Nest thing that Digital Innovations makes is, it's the Nest XL. There it is. So that's what I've put these things in, and it works perfectly because it's wide enough to hold kind of the big set of buttons with the volume up and down, play, pause, and then their magic button. So for $13, you can get a little case. So
did you mention the equalizer?
You know, I didn't. No, it's got a, you're right though. Thank you.
Because
for
I was
that
thinking,
up.
Can you do that? So I'm looking at their page, and when you mentioned DSP, which is a digital signal processor, which, audio is a digital signal. I was scratching my head and I saw, they show on their app, equalizer setting. So apparently I'm going to assume that it's programming the DSP and not doing it.
Correct.
On the phone.
Correct.
Since you have the capability that you have a DSP, why make the phone do it?
Yeah, and what's cool about this is you don't necessarily need the app on all of your devices that you're going to use it with. You certainly can put the app on. The app is free. You download it from the store. But, like, all of the settings are stored inside the earphones. So, for example, I got these one night, and they weren't able to give me access to the app until at some point the next day, I think, and or maybe even a day later. And but they said here, like, calibrate these for yourself, plug them into my phone, which has the app. I plugged it in, I did the calibration, then I unplugged it, and then they remained calibrated. And the same with smart button settings and all that stuff. So very, very cool stuff. All right. And then our final. Any more questions on those, by the way, John?
Could you... Do they have a mic? Could I use them to talk on a phone?
Yeah. There's many microphones in them for like the ambient sound, you know, attenuation and all that stuff. But there is a microphone in there specifically built. Actually, there's several built specifically to use for phone calls so that you get like better, richer sound and that sort of thing. So, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, instead of getting that charge audio adapter, I wonder if I should get these instead.
Oh, yeah.
Because the only time I use my adapter is when I'm using my headset, my iPhone 7.
Right.
So maybe I should try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try these instead.
I've made some phone calls with them. I mean, it works great. It's fantastic. Yeah. Nice. And it's cool because you can allow ambient sound in. If doing a phone call with... like noise canceling can get a little weird. It's like doing a podcast, right? Where you're like totally like in the zones. If you're like walking around, it's a little weird not to hear your environment while you're on the phone, but you can flip that and then you're fine. So it's cool stuff. That's why I included it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sold.
Cool. All right. Leon has a question. He says in episode 641, a listener, all right, a cool stuff found, I should say. A listener mentioned the Silicon Dust HD Home Run Network TV tuners. There is a great app available for iOS and tvOS that lets you watch HD Home Run on your Apple TV or iOS device. They've just started a beta of a DVR feature, and the app is called Channels at getchannels.com. The live TV viewing app has a nice looking guide, gives you some ability to pause and rewind live TV. With the DVR feature, you subscribe for $8 a month, and it can manage recordings much like a TiVo does. The DVR engine runs on a Mac or a variety of NAS devices. Scheduling and viewing can be done on Apple TV, iOS, or the web. It's all very well designed. Thank you so much, Leon. That's I like this. This is interesting to me how much this HD Home Run thing is really kind of impacting stuff. It links with Plex and all that. It's pretty good. Fun stuff. All right, John, we got a couple of tips to go through. First, I wanted to follow up that battery percentage app that we were talking about in the last show.
You and I thought the same thing after that show.
Which was?
You sent me a text message showing me what I was doing, too.
Mm. Yeah, so we put our phones on a meter. This battery percentage app reports some information about your charger. And in the last show, John and I had a discussion about whether it was reporting the rate at which it was charging or the rate at which the charger could charge. And it turns out it's the latter, which I found extremely helpful in the last week, because a lot of times you get a charger and it says it'll do 2 amps or it'll do 2.5 amps or, you know, it'll do whatever, 1 amp. And you can put it on a meter and test it, but the phone sort of regulates what it's pulling in based on how much of a charge is left and all of that stuff. So you don't ever get to truly see what the battery or what the charger is reporting to your phone as its capabilities, except this app tells you, or this app exposes that. So it's called Battery Percentage. You can get it for free in the App Store. And of course, we have a link in the show notes. So just wanted to wrap that conversation up.
What I found interesting as well is that watching it, so our meters show current, of course,
right,
that being an aspect of the charging, and it's interesting to watch it vary, and from what I've seen typically, and so it's managed by the phone, so the phone's like, yeah, this is how much I need, and as you said, the charger says, yeah, well, here's how much I can give you,
right.
But it was interesting, so I was watching my 7 charge, and at some points it was like 1.5, 1.4, which falls within that formula that we came up with.
Yeah, that's right.
But it was interesting to see. I guess it shows that, I mean, in this case, if I had a 1 amp charger, then it would charge at 1 amp because that's all it can supply. But it's interesting because even though this one was higher, it was saying, okay, I'll let a little more in. So I guess what it points out to is that there, if you can get a higher amperage charging circuit, it may benefit you in that you can charge faster.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. It's good. But it's nice to be able to see the capabilities of your battery or your not your phone battery, but like an external battery pack or anything like that. So good. All right. David, speaking of Plex, David has a tip for us. David says, while listening to Mac Geek Up 643, Brian had a question about NAS versus cloud for various types of data. As you probably know, for $60 a year, you can get unlimited storage on Amazon Drive. And now Plex will work with Amazon Drive with Plex Cloud. While I like my Synology NAS, this is a pretty good option for people that don't have one yet. And he's totally right. So, yeah, Plex Cloud lets you store all your movies and everything up in the cloud and then play them streamed to you from there or sync down to your iOS devices or whatever it is you want to do. So, very cool stuff. Thank you, David, for the cool stuff found, the tip, whatever that was. Elliot, John, says, and actually, to be fair, as soon as the show ended, Alex said this same thing in the chat room last week. We were talking about changing icons in show 644, and they both found a utility called Light Icon at freemacsoft.net, and that will do it. That will let you change default icons on Sierra and presumably El Capitan too. So thank you guys for finding that. Good stuff. Right, John?
Yeah, well, I should have thought of it because they also make one of my favorite app cleaners called App Cleaner.
App Cleaner. Hey, there you go. Pretty good.
Yeah, I think you got to fiddle with SIP to.
Is that one where you have to fiddle with SIP?
Yeah, and that's come up in a few things that we've mentioned.
Yeah, like Robin, right? Mentioned that about SwitchRes X, right, John?
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll bring that one up now. No. Basically, someone wrote in. Yeah, well, we're bringing it up now. They said to us, well, because I think you said in the last episode when we were talking about this that you have to fiddle with SIP in order to get something like that to work because it's, you know, dealing with low-level stuff like screen drivers. And he was like, well, no, it works. You know, I installed it on the latest OS and I didn't have to fiddle with it. The truth is somewhere in between in that one of the things that SwitchRes 10 or X, I guess it has to be 10 now. No, X. Whatever. They'll let us know.
Yes.
The only time you have to fiddle with SIP when using that product is if you create a custom resolution, which is one of the things that SwitchRes will let you do.
Okay.
Now, normally, SwitchRes, just its ability to open you up to all the potential ones, should be enough for most people. But if you're a crazy person and you want to make your own custom resolution, then you're going to have to disable SIP in order for that to take hold.
Right. That makes sense. All right, good. Also from 644, listener John wrote in and says, I have a different take on your discussion on memory pressure. I think what Apple is pushing us geeks to do is not focus so much on numbers like your 100 megs of real free memory. At some point, they may decide to use all that memory down to the 10 megs, say, for caching or other stuff that can be reached. That can be reallocated, he says. It would be nice to know if pressure can get over 100%, and I suspect no. And he goes to talk about other things. Yes, you're totally right that choosing a metric and remaining static with that metric over the years is a bad thing for us users to do. And I'm glad you brought this up specifically with regards to my 100 megs free kind of metric that I use and shared with all of you. That metric, A, doesn't come out of thin air, and B, is reevaluated all the time. What I'm looking for is the precursor to a scenario where my system begins to get sluggish. And for me, that is still, even with Sierra, and really has been for a long time, it hasn't changed, but I do keep kind of reevaluating it. As soon as memory gets below, you know, that 100 megs of real free memory, I know that I'm going to have a problem soon. Not catastrophic problem, but I know I'm going to have a problem. And that's why I still use that metric. As soon as I see that, it's like, all right, I got to quit some apps or just close some tabs in Safari. Whatever that is, I need to do something about it so that I'm not going to be in a situation where things just start to really grind. So that's really where that comes from. Any thoughts on that, John?
Yeah, I found the only time I've had to restart is Safari gets terribly confused. Like I'll get the spinning wheel on multiple pages. Other than that, I've rarely gotten into a situation, probably because I got ample memory on both my machines, or more than I need, which I think is a good thing. But I've never gotten to the point where the system has like ground to a halt, but I have had situations where Safari has ground to a halt and typically restarted.
Yeah.
Sometimes I had to restart the machine because it was like taking everything else down too.
Right.
I may be wrong in that Safari was the source, but it was showing, you know, or I think it even comes up sometimes to, yeah, this page is being a jerk or unresponsive.
Right. Right.
And it's like, do you want to still be here? Or should we close this tab?
Sometimes
it can warn you against it, but
sure.
I found more often than not.
Probably restart. Not. That's right. Yeah. It's just, yeah. Two things have come up for me in the last 24 hours, little tips that I want to share. First of all, there is a Facebook Messenger phishing scam going on right now. And I got a message from my daughter that made it clear that she had fallen prey to this scam. But what happens is you'll get a message from someone that has fallen prey to it, and it'll have a picture of you. And it'll, like, the message I got from her is, Dave, it's you. And it says video Dave Hamilton. And, you know, it said I had 565,000 views, YouTube.com. You click on it and it asks you to log into Facebook. And of course, A, you're not logging into Facebook. And B, my daughter doesn't call me Dave. She calls me dude. So that's how I knew something wasn't right.
Dude?
That's what she calls me. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's what both the kids call me. Yeah. They found it much easier to call me like not dad in like when they were younger, like lots of kids around. Nobody, you know.
Oh, right. If you get lost and you say dad, well, then all the dads.
Right. And so they started calling me Dave initially. And that worked, but they're like, yeah, we got to come up with something better. And they're like, we like dude. So dude is what it was. So anyway, but be careful of that. This morning after when we woke up together and, you know, cause she has to go to work when I go to the podcast and we had breakfast and she's like, yeah, I got hacked. I said, yeah, did you change your Facebook password? Yeah. I said, do you use that Facebook password for like everything else? She said, yeah. I said, okay, anything associated with that email address, you have to change to a different password. And one of them was her email address. And I thought, okay, you really got to change that because now if they have your email, they can, you know, get in. And her email address is, we found sort of an accidental security bonus here. So the email address that her public facing email address, the one that she uses, is actually not her email account. Her email account is a Gmail account, but her public facing email is at one of our domains forwarded to her Gmail account. So it's just a simple forward. But the nice part about that was, even if someone had her email address and the password she used for her email address, it didn't matter because they didn't know where to log in to actually get her email, which is interesting. So having a forwarded email address has this additional security sort of layer because people don't know easily where to log in to hack into your email, which I thought was interesting. So there's some sort of unintentional security using a forwarded email address. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah. I've seen another one on Facebook, which I'm almost sure it's some text along the lines of, if you've seen a post from me that says something hurtful or you know, inappropriate, it wasn't me. There's this hack going around and I'm like, And please paste this, you know, on your wall to let everybody know that. And I'm like, I think that's just someone who was just being a jerk and is just trying to figure out how to take it back.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I responded. I'm like, by the way, here are the places on Facebook you can look to see what's been put on your timeline. And also there's a part where you can see what apps have been authorized. If anything, you may have been hacked. I'll agree. Maybe it can happen if you give an app authorization to post to your timeline and you didn't realize that you did, then
so
maybe
this
will
wasn't
happen.
this was that these people had given their Facebook username and password.
It was a phishing page.
It was
meant
page
to harvest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Passwords.
All right. Yeah. And then the other thing that came up was a friend of mine said his phone, he has Apple Music, and he said his iPhone was stuck in the mode of shuffling every song. And he handed me his phone. This was a friend actually who wound up doing sound at our Fling gig the other night, my buddy Scott. And so I was like, I wanted to help him, but I wouldn't want to help anyway. You know, I mean, it's just it's what we do. Mm-hmm. And so he said, yeah, once you get a song playing, you know, I can skip to the next track manually, but when it gets to the end, it cycles around. So I started looking and looking and looking and looking some more, and I could not find the button in the UI where you set shuffle. And so I said, well, you know, I'll mess with it when I get home, man. And he's like, okay, you know. So he, you know, he went home. I went home. And here's where that button is. Once you get a song playing in the music app on your iPhone, and I'm going to do it. I've got some screenshots of this. I'll put up an article, but I'll explain it to you folks. You'll see, no matter where you are in the music app, you'll have along the bottom will be sort of the current song that's playing and then like a play pause control. If you tap that, you bring up sort of the full sheet for that song, right? And it shows you the album art. It shows you the shuttle controls, where you are in the song. You could scrub around, and then you've got, you know, next or previous play pause and forward, and then the volume at the almost at the bottom, and then AirPlay stuff at the very bottom. And there's three little dots at the bottom, and those don't help you. They give you more options, but not the option you want. Here's the deal. This page is scrollable. I had no idea it was scrollable until I started messing with it. And the reason is because it kind of comes up from the bottom like a sheet. So it doesn't feel in a UX way like it's scrollable, but it sure is. And as soon as you scroll, you get to see shuffle and repeat controls. And they're right there. And then you get to see the whole up next thing and all of that. So that's where that is. Frustrating as that might be, that it's hidden, but figured I'd share that with all of you because I knew they were there somewhere. They have to be. But yeah, sure enough, that's what he was in. He was in single song repeat mode. So it's good stuff. Any thoughts on that, John?
No.
All right. Then I want to talk about our three sponsors. How's that work for you?
Excellent.
All right. The first I want to talk about is Blue Apron. You know, I talk a lot about my family on this show, and hopefully it's obvious to you folks that our family, you know, we're pretty tight, even though we've got teenagers that are 15 and 17 and kind of off doing their own things. And I attribute one of the things that I attribute to creating that tightness for us is that we eat as many meals together as we possibly can. In fact, I just said that I got up. We've scheduled this show, in fact, so that we record right after my daughter goes off to work. And that means I get to eat breakfast with her on Sunday mornings. And that's a really cool thing. Blue Apron makes it really easy and fun to eat really good meals together, either as a family or, you know, with your partner, your roommate, whatever it is. They make this super easy and fun, really fun. What you do is you go to blueapron.com/MGG. And by going to the /MGG link, you get your first three meals for free. And there are some really tasty meals. They've got two different plans. They've got a two-person plan and a family plan, which is a four-person plan. And I mean, some of these, we just had these pimento cheese burgers that we made. Like, my daughter hates cheeseburgers. She hates hamburgers. She loved these things. Like, she's still raving about them yesterday, and we had them like 3 days ago. Upcoming on the next couple of weeks here, they've got Laotian vegetable lob, which looks like a vegetarian thing. I mean, the pictures look delicious. They've got a tangelo and honey glazed salmon, a smoky pork burgers. On the family plan, they have a Sicilian style bucatini pasta. Oh, it looks fantastic. Blackened chicken and rice. Really, really good stuff. And what's cool is all the ingredients show up along with basically a how-to. It's like with pictures and everything, and you can just all do it together. So not only are you eating the meal together, but you're preparing it. You're cooking it together too. Really tasty stuff, really fun stuff. And you know, it's just fun to do. So you got to check it out. Go to blueapron.com/MGG, as I mentioned. And that way they'll know we sent you, and you'll also get your first three meals for free. Second sponsor. Oh, right, of course, before I move on to our second sponsor, our thanks to Blue Apron for sponsoring this episode. Our second sponsor is Otherworld Computing at MacSales.com. These are some great people, and they make some great, great stuff. you know, anytime I need to buy anything to upgrade my Mac, to enhance my Mac, if I need like a, you know, an external hard drive case or RAM or really just anything to like add on, MacSales.com is the first place that I go because A, they have good stuff. They test it all. They know what they're doing. B, they have good prices. So obviously that's really important. I feel like quality is better than is more important than price, but then they've got good prices. And then C, and this might even be the most important thing, they back everything they do with great customer service. Like they're obsessed about customer service because they understand that every business is the customer service business. And that's important. Really, really cool stuff. We mentioned in the last spot that they have this new product, this upgrade for the 2016 MacBook Pro that will enable users to add more storage and stuff. It kind of, you know, fits on the bottom of the MacBook Pro. They still don't have a name for it yet, but they say they'll have that really, really soon. And it's, you know, this thing looks cool. It makes your MacBook Pro a little bit thicker, adds all these ports and some storage to it. So you got to check all this out. Go to MacSales.com. And dig into what these folks are doing over there, because that's the place I go when I need to get something for my Mac. And I highly support the concept of you going and doing that too. Our sincere thanks to MacSales.com for sponsoring this episode. And of course, Barebones Software at Barebones.com. The folks at Barebones make BB Edit, and BB Edit doesn't suck. It hasn't sucked forever. It's always been great. BB Edit's a text editor. I know. It's crazy that I would be this excited about a text editor, but I am. It's good stuff. And now you can get BB Edit for free with limited features. But here's the deal. For most of you, those limited features are going to be all you need. And it's certainly the way you should test it out. So go to barebones.com, download the trial, and see how that works for you. If you need some of the additional features, it's only $50. And then, you know, you're kind of good. But you might not even need those. You can do things like comparing the text of two different documents together, and it shows you line by line and even character by character what's different in this beautiful graphical interface that just makes sense. It highlights text when you're doing coding stuff like HTML or C or JavaScript. It sort of just knows what language you're in, and it starts to highlight it, not in an obtrusive or brash way, but very subtle ways that give you these visual cues as to where things are in your code and how to move around. Really cool stuff. These folks totally know what they're doing. And they've known what they're doing for a really, really long time. So you got to go check them out. Go to barebones.com, download yourself a copy of BB Edit. It is free to download. Start playing with it. If you need more, you buy the full featured version. If you don't, then you don't. And I think you get 30 days to test out the new features anyway, or the full features anyway. So you just got to go to barebones.com, download a copy of BB Edit. Then move on with your day. You can press pause, go download, and unpress pause, and then here you are. Our thanks to the folks at Barebones and the makers of BB Edit there for sponsoring this episode. All right, John, we've got plenty of time left, actually. Let's, you want to take us to Mike, John?
Do I?
I think you do.
All right, hold on. Mike here.
I know, I'm throwing you out of order on the thing. I've been talking for a while, so we should hear from you.
Yeah, I got it.
We'll let you sing a song.
Researching. I wasn't quite ready. I'm going to sing a song, and I have some additional answers here.
Great.
So, if our friend is listening, there are going to be even more options. So, Mike says, I got my mom an iPad for Christmas. That's very nice. She has no Wi-Fi in her house, and she won't get it. Okay. I don't know.
Don't even.
Whose condition that is, but let's move on. I put her on my data plan as a third member with my wife and me. We have Wi-Fi and rarely use any data. We assumed she'd easily fit within the data limit. She blew right through it. We increased the plan. She blew right through it. She's now blown through 11 gigs of data. Wow.
She needs Wi-Fi.
In a week and a half.
Okay. I'm going to let you finish.
I want to finish.
Okay.
Where you're going with this. This is going to turn into.
We're going to talk for a while about this.
In depth here.
Let's answer Mike's specific question. And then if we want to rant, we'll wax poetic.
All right. Is there any utility that will record month to date cell data usage for the iPad? I can get the data from my provider using their app or web, but it's too many clicks for my mom to be able to monitor it. I just want her to be able to look it up and see how much daily, monthly she's run up so far that day and month, like a meter in a taxi. All right. So as was pointed out, there's already. So you got an app or you got the web. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it, I'm just going to mention it as an option here, though it's probably not what you want, is that if you do go on the device and you go into general settings, probably cellular, it's going to show you the amount of data that you used. But then you have to keep looking there. And you know, it's not proactive. It's not going to warn you. That's not built into the OS. Two options I'm going to suggest. One is there's a program that's going to work for everybody. And I've been using it for ages. And actually, I think when I got it, it was they had a get it for free deal, which, but even it's called Dataman Next. I don't know if you use it. I think you use it, Dave, right?
I do. Yeah. Yeah.
And Dataman Next, what it does is exactly what you want. You tell it the billing cycle, the data per month, that's in the plan, and it measures both your Wi-Fi and your data usage.
And separately.
Correct. Yeah. It'll show you like, you know, right now I look at mine and it shows me, you know, so it shows a little Wi-Fi icon for that. So just if anybody's curious. So I've used 292.1 megabytes of data and 6.9 gigs of Wi-Fi.
Sure.
In my current billing period. So here's what it's going to show you. So knowing all these things, how much data and when your billing cycle is, and then starts measuring and it sits in the background. And then when you start getting, it'll show you the percentage used. So right now it shows mine is 10% used. Okay, I'm well within my limit.
Sure.
My 2 gig plan. And it says safe because it's looking at how much data you're using and it knows when your cycle ends. And what it does is when things start looking like they're going to spiral out of control, like with your mom here, it's going to start saying, whoa, if you keep using data at this rate, you're going to blow past your data cap. And that's what it does. So it turns from green to yellow to red, and it'll say, forecast, you're going to blow through your data cap. To me, this is the best option, and it doesn't matter what provider you're with. The only thing I'll mention is that you may be able, depending on who you get your data from, so I also have on my phone, so Verizon is good about this, they have a widget that also shows and will also be proactive about warning me when I'm about to blow past my data, but not all data providers offer an iOS widget.
Right. And some will text you as you get close to those limits, too.
Yes, they do that with me as well. You have to turn on the feature saying.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another option is see what your data provider gives you. They may offer the feature for iOS. But now that we're done with that, those are all the answers that I have.
I don't have any others. Yeah.
Anywhere else. But then I think we're talking philosophically here.
I don't even know that philosophically is the right word to use. I mean, we're just going to talk logically about this. So here's the thing.
The statement that I highlighted and kind of chuckled at? She has no Wi-Fi and she won't get it. Now, I don't know if that's because she has some concerns about Wi-Fi privacy or the Razor or if. I guess we need to understand more about the concern with having Wi-Fi in the house.
But I've heard from enough people recently that are concerned about this, that there's some myths that I either need to understand or dispel or both. Right. But I've heard privacy concerns, like if I have Wi-Fi on, then people could hack into my Quicken and see how much money I have in the bank. And so many walls would have to fall down for that to actually happen. But yes, it's possible. Use a password on your Wi-Fi. Don't share the password with your neighbors. Don't post it on your mailbox. That's at least a valid concern. It's to me also very addressable. But
yeah,
but it's a concern and you should be aware of that. And that's really smart. Guest network is another great way to deal with that so that you're not constantly giving everybody that comes to your house your Wi-Fi password, right? So because a guest network generally will sort of carve off them from the rest of your stuff so they can get on the internet and but not at any of your local stuff. And, yeah. And that's good.
So I'm with the privacy aspect.
Totally.
Because I would say that data, it's relatively, it's more difficult, I would say, for Joe Random Hacker to start intercepting your cell data signal. It's not impossible.
No.
But, you know, most people don't have the equipment to even do that sort of thing.
So. Sure. Yeah, that's true. But when we get into this thing, and I've heard people say Wi-Fi is like unhealthy for me or Wi-Fi raised.
Wait, let me put on my hat.
Yeah, you get your tinfoil hats on.
Yes.
Both. Yeah.
Now, on both sides to protect.
That's right. Now, totally. As I've said many times, I emotionally support all conspiracy theories. Doesn't mean I intellectually support them all. There are some that I intellectually support for sure. And I would love to talk with you folks that, in a different venue about those sometime. But if you're interested, however, emotionally, I support them all in that I cheer them on. I love conspiracy theories. This one, I'm not even sure I emotionally support. In fact, I think I emotionally protest it because especially when you're someone that says, I don't want Wi-Fi in my house. You know, that's bad for me. But I'll have this other radio in my cell phone that goes instead of going, say, maybe 30 or 40 feet between the, you know, the base radio and my phone. Now I'm going to have this radio that goes several miles to get to the cell tower. To me, that's just not thinking about the problem. And if you look at this, the power usage of your Wi-Fi radios versus the power usage of your cell radios, I'm pretty sure you're going to find, because I've looked and I know for certain, that you're going to find that your cell radio has to be far more powerful than your Wi-Fi radio because it's going much, much further. And here's the thing. Even if you choose not to have a cell phone in your house for these very same reasons, you should also choose to buy a home in a cell phone dead spot because you're getting these waves coming regardless of whether or not you personally have a phone. This stuff has been proven to be very, very safe. And I would love, I believe that it is possible that there is a human on the planet that is affected in a noticeable way by Wi-Fi radiation, for lack of a better term, because it is radiation. I mean, it's very low level. I believe that because I can feel magnets. I know that sounds weird. I can feel magnets. So I'm sure there's someone out there that can feel Wi-Fi. I would love, though. I'm sure it's possible that there's someone that could feel Wi-Fi, but I would love to test that in like a double blind test because I don't know that I've actually encountered someone that can feel Wi-Fi. So that's my rant about this, John. How do you feel about that?
No, I agree with you in that I can understand the concern because there's frequencies that are used by cell phones are, as we've spoken about Wi-Fi, are obviously affected, can affect a human in some negative way, but under very different conditions than you find with a cell phone. I guess the only thing I was trying to find, Dave, is what's the power, you know, so we're in like, you know, 2.4 gig and you know, some other gigahertz frequencies usually for most cell phones these days. I'm trying to find the power levels that the phone itself uses. It has to be much less because I think I just saw the other day, I actually saw at one of our local stores, I actually saw some guys working on a cell tower and I'm like, yeah, what are you putting up there? A new antenna? He's like, oh yeah, we're putting up, I think he said like a 10 watt antenna. I'm like, oh really? That's it? Just 10 watts?
Yeah.
It surprised me that it was such a low power level for the antenna on the tower. So yeah. That's at such a low level, which is way less than like your microwave. So the phone is, I don't know if the phone is on the order of milliwatts, but
it is, but you might get to the point where you're going to be at like, you know, maybe at 1 watt, maybe. So 1,000 milliwatts. Yeah.
When you look at, you know, like I have a 1200 watt microwave. All right. At 1200 watts at 2.4 gigs, then you got something to worry about. What, yeah. 1 watt?
It's 1 watt.
Yeah, it's such a small fraction of that I doubt you'd even feel it.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah. It's mostly going to run less than that. It's going to run less than a watt. But I think 1 watt is the legal limit here in the U.S. If that's changed, it certainly hasn't changed by an order of magnitude. It's, you know,
Now, people have told me if you have a concern about that, and I remember this discussion coming up when I was doing a lot of RF work, use a Bluetooth headset instead. Because then rather than having this, the raw cell phone power blasting through your head, you're going to have the cell phone, you're going to have the 2.4 gigs from the Bluetooth, which is, again, a much lower power level.
Yeah.
So if you really have a concern about being exposed to the phone radiation, then...
I'll say, so here's the thing. There are, in the U.S., and I believe this is correct, but I'm only researching it while we're doing this. In the U.S., at 5 gigahertz, there are, and this is really actually interesting for choosing channels, too. It appears as though there are different power limits for channels in the different bands. So channels, 5 gigahertz channels between 36 and 48, it appears, and again, I've done, 30 seconds of research while I'm talking to someone else, so I could be wrong about this. But it appears as though that limit is 200 milliwatts. For channels between 52 and 64, again, 5 gigahertz channels, the power is 1,000 milliwatts, 1 watt. For channels 149 to 161, it's 4,000 milliwatts, so 4 watts. So, yeah, the higher channels are allowed to use more power, and then perhaps, I'll say theoretically, could then, you know, have more speed or longer distance or whatever that is. So I just throw that out there. I'll put this these charts that I found in the show notes. Yeah. Yeah.
So fun, I guess the stuff. Question is, I mean, if there is internet service in this house, then adding Wi-Fi may not be a bad thing from a cost standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to buy a router and you got to pay a monthly fee for your internet.
Well, you know, let me
access.
Think about that. I mean, if you're paying $50 a month for, as long as your internet costs less than
right.
cell usage, the data plan,
right.
then it may make sense to complement the internet with some Wi-Fis and save some coin.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's
I like the direction you brought that in, though. Thanks. Typically don't go to the tinfoil hat conspiracy theory, you know.
Yeah. Well, we even brought it back to a more realistic thing. So now this makes me think that I want to make sure that it, all else being equal, I want to run my 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi on the high band, you know, higher channel numbers, 149 to 161, so that I can use, you know, maximum power I'm on. Right. That's the. That's the thing. I don't know. Yeah. All right. Moving on. Jeff has another question that might result in a similar conversation. But Jeff asks, I just finished listening to MGG 644 from last week. I appreciate all your work and learn new things. He says and you're welcome, Jeff. Thanks for saying that. We really do appreciate it. In fact, I would say in the last week, we've probably gotten more just general thank you emails than we typically do. And I've replied to every one of them, of course, but they truly do mean a lot. I mean, thank you for sending those thank you emails. It means a ton to us. And thank you for this, Jeff. He says, in 644, you guys were talking about memory leaks in programs, especially browsers, and how to solve this. It seems like you are both predisposed to keeping your computers on 24/7. I find this to be less beneficial option than turning off your computer each night. I've been in IT since 1981, and like you both, I program, build computers, troubleshoot, network, create, print pieces, etc., etc. In my experience, the small time you save not booting up each morning, you will waste, with the computer being less responsive than it can be if you start fresh each day. There's also the issue of using more electrical power and using more of the machine's life, as every mechanical object has a finite lifespan. He says, I value my time and my client's time. If you use your computer to do a task that is critically time sensitive and mission critical, where seconds of downtime actually do matter, then of course you should leave your computer on. He says, but I'm talking, power systems, communication, security, and the like, not email and Facebook. My experience with many different platforms over the decades is that you'll be wasting more time during the day with sluggish response and unexpected behavior than you'll gain by leaving your machine on every night. That's you're not wrong. I mean, we said that rebooting your Mac regularly, you know, I reboot once a week, whether I need to or not, because I need to. But sleeping the machine, sort of mitigates a lot of those power issues. You know, yes, it uses more power when sleeping than when being powered off, but not that much more. And your fans are off. All of that mechanical stuff is not in use when the computer's asleep. So it's just basically RAM and a little trickle to the CPU. So I don't know. And I also like to remote access into my Mac, and which if you have a Bonjour sleep proxy, like an Apple router or an Apple TV, that can wake your Mac up when you try to connect to it. And then of course put it back to sleep, or it will go back to sleep. So I don't know that I get where you're going with this, Jeff, but I think sleeping is for most of us better than powering off, except you're right. You still got to reboot to get that fresh, clean, you know, system. What do you think, John?
I'm going to apologize. No, I'm not going to apologize. I'm going to shake my fist at Jeff's
All right.
suggestion, because to me, it's like throwing in the towel. It's like admitting defeat by doing a fresh start every day. I can understand the reasoning behind it, but I disagree with it. And like Dave, the way that I run my machines and the way I suggest most people should is you do what you said. When you're not using it, you put it to sleep. It puts it in a very low power mode.
Yeah.
So I think that highly reduces the, if it's on all the time thing. And I agree. Yes, things have a lifespan, but in sleep mode, they're almost not running, you know, in the, it's drawing way less power and way less resources, on the order of sometimes several orders of magnitude. It could be drawing 1/100, last I checked, of how much power it draws versus when it's on. So, right. And plus, waking from sleep, even if you're reading RAM from the disk with an SSD, is almost instantaneous. Whereas I would say I like the benefit of being able to wake up the machine and be able to get work done versus having to wait for it to boot up. That takes many times longer. So at least for the way I like to work, I like the machine to wake up. And like you said, Dave, if you're doing remote access, as long as the machine can support wake on LAN, you have it available to you to, you know, to log into if you need to, if it's in, even if it is sleeping. So, But it sounds like, you know, doing the IT thing, that equation has worked for him. So perhaps in some environments it would make sense to freshly power things on every time.
Well, and there are many people, our esteemed John Martellaro here at the Mac Observer being one of them, that says even rebooting once a week is considered throwing in the towel. Like he values his uptime.
I want to see uptime of months.
Dude. Okay. So
I'm looking at my mini and it says 7 days. So what am I talking about here? And actually hold on, let me look at my and my MacBook Pro is at 2 days. Okay, I'll shut up.
Yeah, well, no, here's the thing. Like, I get it. From being a Unix guy for forever, I get the whole concept of uptime. But, and let me look. The server upon which Mac Observer runs has an uptime of 397 days.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Has it been rebooted in over a year?
Correct. Yeah.
That's pretty...
I know.
What Unix-y thing is it running?
What are we?
It's not OS X, is it?
It's a version of CentOS that we've got on there. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
So it's Linux. Yeah. We run that machine very differently than I run my computer at home or in the office or in the studio. We run, you know, the same. I don't know. Let's say there's 10 apps running on it, right? Various different servers, web server, obviously, a couple of proxies, a database server, you know, maybe it's not even 10, but it's probably 10 when you look at all the little things or whatever. The streaming server that we use for MacGeekab.com/stream so that everybody can join us in the chat room here, right? That runs on that machine. So various things, but they all just stay running. I'm not like if I use probably 100 different apps on my Mac throughout the week, and they don't always stay running. I launch it, I quit it, you know, various different things. And it's, you probably use 100 too. When you look at, think about all the little menu bar items and all the stuff that you've got going, each of those is a separate little app. Some of those stay running forever, like things do on Medusa, our current machine that TMO runs on. But a lot of these things, you're quitting and you're managing RAM very differently on your desktop interactive machine. And I would even say that this is true for an interactive Linux desktop, right? Not a server. So a server being up for, you know, long periods of time makes total sense. And it would also make sense for your Mac Mini if you're running that as a server, or, you know, whatever. But for a desktop interactive machine, it doesn't make sense. And we've all seen it, that things get really sluggish and it's just worth rebooting. And that's not throwing in the towel. It's just the way it works. It's fine. Yeah. I don't know. Also,
I'm not changing my ways.
Right. No, I know. It's good. That's good. Hey, I do want to cycle back to the, we'll move on. We've got time to do more, but I want to cycle back to the conversation we had about Mike and the cell phone data, or the data usage with his mom. As someone here in the chat room, and I can't see who it was anyway, at MacGeekab.com/stream mentioned all of the cell plans, all of the cell providers, the four major ones, T-Mobile, Sprint, AT&T, and Verizon here in the U.S., announced unlimited data plans. I mean, Sprint and T-Mobile already had them. Verizon announced first. AT&T followed almost immediately. So now you can get unlimited data for, it's about $100 a month in general for the first device. And then to get four devices on like a family type plan, it's about $180, maybe $160, depending on which provider you use. In fact, Jeff Gamet put together an awesome little comparison and a chart and stuff that we'll put in the show notes. But that actually might be the answer for our friend Mike here, is to just get an unlimited data plan for that iPad, and then you're good. And you can get, I think they all do start to cap out at speeds. They start throttling. AT&T and Verizon start the earliest at 22 gigs in a month, Sprint at 23, and T-Mobile at the top with 28. But they say that that's not an automatic throttle. That's only if you've A, passed the limit, and B, are, you know, actively in an area where there's congestion. They will throttle back those people that have passed the limit. So there you go. That's, we'll just, you know, we'll throw that out there. Good stuff, right, John? Yeah?
Sure. Whatever you say, boss.
Whatever you say. That's right. All right. Andrew, let's talk about this, Andrew, because Andrew has an interesting little question here. He says, I'm in the process of trying to breathe new life into my 2009 15-inch MacBook Pro and would like your ideas on a replacement Wi-Fi for either the Express Card port or a USB version. I hauled this old laptop out since my children want to use a computer, and upon booting it up, I found that I could not connect to Wi-Fi. After taking it in for diagnosis, it was conveyed that my Wi-Fi is broken and that there are no parts since the laptop is too old. Everything else works very well, including Ethernet, and I'm going to replace the old rotational drive with an SSD and upgrade the RAM from 4 to 8 and even possibly 16. My dilemma comes in choosing the correct replacement Wi-Fi. What do you think? So that Mac supports up to USB 2 and not USB 3, but USB is still probably going to be your best bet for a Wi-Fi add-on, at least as far as I think. John, you might disagree, and I like that. So I hate to recommend something I've never used, but I haven't used any of the kind of current USB Wi-Fi adapters out there. The good news is they seem to exist on Amazon all for about $20 or less. So, you know, there's some experimentation that's allowed here. And I just searched for USB Wi-Fi on Amazon and then looked to make sure that Mac was, you know, Mac or OS X or Mac OS or something was supported in the description. And then I looked at reviews and I found a couple of them. You know, like I said, for $15, you can get one that'll do 802.11ac. You won't necessarily get those full speeds because your USB caps out at like 480 megabits a second. And some of these will go up to 833, but a lot of them actually just top out at 433. They've got one stream of 5 gigahertz. And you know what? That's going to be probably plenty. I would say make sure you get one that works with the Mac. but also make sure you get one that's dual band that does either both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz. It won't do them simultaneously, but just getting something. But yeah, we'll put some links in the show notes to the things that I found. But I think that's probably the simplest way. Some of these are really small. Like you plug it in and there's just a little antenna that sticks up basically right from your USB port. So they're pretty tiny and efficient space-wise. So I think that's what I would go with. What about you, John?
It's worth mentioning, though, this specific machine is too old, but there is a company that I ran across a while ago. And actually, I'm just outside of the range of machines they make this for, but it's a company called Quicker Tech.
Okay.
And they actually make a number of 802.11ac Wi-Fi cards that are meant to replace the ones that are already in certain Macs. And it looks like it's mostly MacBook Airs, and then I think I see some Core 2 Duos and some Retinas.
Okay.
Of various vintages, some going all the way back to,
cool.
Including some really old ones. That's an option. You know what surprised me, though, is so I was looking, Dave, and for example, some of the major network vendors, like, I was just searching here, and I'm wondering if this would be an option, but like Netgear. I came up to Netgear, and it looks like they have a whole bunch of USB-based Wi-Fi adapters, but looking through all they offer, none of them seem to explicitly state that they have Mac support. They say, oh, no, it's Windows. So I'm wondering if you got a third party from it. Well, another suggestion would be, of all the major makers of network equipment, Netgear, of course, being one, see if they make a USB adapter. Netgear clearly does. They just don't say it works with a Mac. I'm wondering if you plugged one in, if it
might
would,
just work. Yeah.
Is that there? As far as I can tell, and I've had this happen. So I actually have a USB-based, the Bear Extender. That's a USB-based Wi-Fi adapter. And when I plug it in, an interface comes up in my network saying, oh, yeah, this is a USB 802.11 network interface controller. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So at a very low level, it recognizes that there's something that can do Wi-Fi.
I thought about the Bear Extender, but it's kind of a pain in the neck for sort of a permanent solution because it's this extra little, it's not that little, it's this extra dongle that sort of has to sit next to your MacBook Pro as opposed to just something you pop in the USB port and you're done. And you could move around with these other ones. And also Bear Extender's support has kind of been weird, right? Are they back in our good graces again?
They still call it a beta, but so they were, the problem with a lot of these guys that offer the USB based or any Wi-Fi things that aren't built in is that a lot of times whoever they're working with, their driver support starts.
That's the problem.
Lacking.
Yeah.
There was one that I really liked a while ago, and I think the company doesn't exist anymore. It was called the Wi-Fire, and it was really good, and it was like actually gave you a power boost and stuff, and then they kind of went away.
Yeah.
But at least in the case of Bear Extender, their two antenna, I think it's the Bear Extender Turbo, it does work under Sierra on my MacBook Pro.
So
they are... So either they or the person that makes the driver.
Yeah.
So that may be an option.
Yeah.
But with any of these guys, I think, but they also include driver software, which gives you additional functionality beyond just the computer seeing it as something that can offer Wi-Fi.
Right. It seems like from the reviews I read about these, kind of single stream ones on Amazon that OS X just has built-in support for it. You don't even need drivers. But I could be wrong about that. Like I said, I'm definitely, out on this limb of recommending something that I've never personally tried. So your mileage may vary. All right.
Yeah, well, returns are usually good with
Amazon. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Amazon's so good with returns. Man, I ordered a drumhead on Wednesday. Actually, I ordered two. One of them arrived on Friday as planned, and the other one said, I checked the tracking when it didn't arrive, and it says it was like it hasn't made it to the UPS facility yet. And so I just emailed Amazon because they're usually really good when something's late. They give me an extra month of Prime. So, if I just, it's like a 10 second email. And if I do that 10 seconds, enough, I get, a year's worth of Prime for free or whatever. And they're really good about it. And they wrote me back. They're like, yeah, we're really sorry. They did. They extended the month of Prime. And they said, we're just going to ship you another one. And so that'll be here Monday. But I'm sure the other one will show up. So I get, two bass drum heads. They're great with customer service is really what I'm trying to say. So, I get it.
And the last thing, so I'll thank our friend Brian in the chat room, but he says he has 2 gigabit TP-Link USB adapters, and they come with software. But that's
Ethernet, right? I think the chat room is talking about Ethernet, not Wi-Fi. So just catch up with that because the one that Andy mentioned in the chat room too is an Ethernet adapter. So just be aware that there's 2 different conversations happening simultaneously, which happens all the time in our chat room, folks. It's actually great. There's like this ancillary discussion that sometimes is directly related to what we're talking about here, and other times is just sort of a spinoff of it, and other times has nothing to do with what we're talking about here. So it's great. So yes. All right. Moving onward, Patrick asks, he says, I'm having an interesting effect with a PDF document. He says, I took a PDF that I had to fill out in a form and I copied it to the desktop. Quick Look will not show the data that I filled out in the field, such as name and address, etc., if the document was saved as a PDF. But if I take the same document and save it as a JPEG, Quick Look will show the data in those fields. And he sent us an example. He says, is my Finder corrupted? Is it perturbed? Is it upset? What's wrong? And your Finder is fine. So Apple's PDF rendering engine is not complete. You may not even see all the data in those fields when you open it in preview. You probably will. But there are even some fields that won't appear in preview. And I've seen this before. And it's the reason I keep Acrobat Reader on my Mac, because sometimes, you know, somebody will say, oh, yeah, I signed that contract or whatever, you know, with a PDF, and you look at it because I use preview because it's way faster than Acrobat Reader. But I think some of those speed, you know, enhancements in Apple's own PDF rendering engine skip some of the functionality that Acrobat has. And so this is not surprising at all. And I think Quick Look even skips some of the ones that you'll even get in preview. So if you're not seeing what you want in Quick Look or in preview with a PDF, then just get Acrobat Reader. It's free. Don't let it become your default PDF reader unless you really want that. But my advice is stick with preview and then just use Acrobat Reader when you have to, you know, right click and choose open with or however else you want to do it. So that's my advice on that. Any thoughts on that, John? Have you experienced the same thing?
Not really. I understand it. They have a different rendering engine and all that, and sometimes things go awry, but I've never, had the displeasure of running into that. And just to wrap things up here, at least our Wi-Fi thing, I did find several adapters here from TP-Link that are USB Wi-Fi adapters.
Least
one of them advertise. I clicked on a couple, and they claim OS X support, though they don't. So I didn't see one that explicitly said it supported Sierra. So they may not. But no, they have a boatload of them, and at least one or two or three that I clicked on said, oh yeah, they work for the Mac too. You may have to
Put
a driver. So TP-Link for both Ethernet and USB Wi-Fi for the Mac look to be a company to explore.
Cool stuff. Well, that's the end of our cool stuff for this week, John. Fun, but, you know, all good things.
Well, also sounds like it's the end of the episode.
It is the end of the episode, yeah. I think that's as far as we can take it.
Well, what are we going to do?
Well, next week, I was thinking actually we should talk. We're going to record a little bit early next week. We'll talk about the schedule because I'm going to be in Florida with Lisa and the kids. But I want to talk about, because we're heading into the season of lightning strikes and all of that, at least here in North America. So I want to talk about buying a UPS, what it takes, what you should look for, how you should pick a UPS to buy. Because even once you decide to get one, you know, you see what's the difference between watts and volt amps, and then you just kind of stop. Don't stop. We will help you. So we'll talk a little bit about that next week. I won't say it's a deep dive because there's probably not enough to do a deep dive on that. But it'll be a deep dive segment, not a whole deep dive episode. So fun stuff, John. You know what? I do want to do one thing while the band is playing here, and that is that I want to read a review that we got, because you can go to MacGeekGab.com/iTunes and leave us a review, and it can be as simple as what Jim Fantasia from the U.S. wrote a couple of weeks ago. He says, one of the great Mac-centric podcasts, a must-be in your tool chest of tech-related shows, especially for the Apple ecosystem. So thank you so much, Jim. Not only do we like seeing your review, but all of your reviews really, really help us. So go ahead and visit MacGeekGab.com/iTunes, and that will link you as close as we can link you to where you can leave a review. We can't get you right there because there's no direct link to that, but that'll get you really, really close, we promise. So that's that. And then we have our new Mac Geek Gab Premium, which is up and running. Most of you are migrated over. Anybody who is renewing will be migrated over. The only people that haven't been migrated are folks that aren't yet due to renew. Like if you're due to renew in late March or April, you're still being migrated, but otherwise that will all happen. For those of you that want to sign up or find out more about Premium, visit MacGeekGab.com/Premium, and that will bring you right there. You get to check out the ways that you can contribute directly to us. Anybody who is active and contributing there gets access to our Premium at MacGeekGab.com email address, which is a priority one for you. We do prioritize that. Some weeks we can't get through all the questions. I think this might have been one of those weeks where we couldn't get through quite everything yet. We will get to the rest of the questions, but the Premium stuff we got to multiple times throughout the week because that's what we do. You help us keep the lights on. We do everything we can for you. So thank you to everybody that's a Premium supporter. In this episode, I think we had three questions from Premium supporters: Robin, John, and Mike. So thank you to all of you for doing what you do and helping us do what we do. For the rest of you, and you are all, of course, welcome, feedback@MacGeekGab.com is the email address for you to use.
I totally agree. This time I'll listen to what you have to say, Dave. And that's feedback@MacGeekGab.com.
I meant feedback@MacGeekGab.com. That is the place for all of you non-premium listeners to send questions, comments, tips, cool stuff found. As you can see, we definitely address as many of those as we can that come in, really generally all of them. And then certainly they make up a good portion of the show, too. I want to thank the folks at CacheFly, CacheFly.com, for providing all the bandwidth to get from us to you. And of course, I want to thank all of our sponsors. Of course, the sponsors for this episode: Blue Apron at blueapron.com/MGG, where you get your first three meals for free. Otherworld Computing at macsales.com. Barebones Software at barebones.com. And then, of course, fatcatsoftware.com/MGG. smilesoftware.com/geek. GoDaddy at GoDaddy.com, where MGG30 saves you 30%. But I want to thank you for listening, because we have a lot of fun together, and we couldn't do this without you. So seriously, thank you. What do you have to say, John?
I have not one, not two, not three, but three things to say to you, Dave. And that's don't get caught.
Don't get caught. Get caught. Get caught. Get caught. Get caught.
Made up.